China's economy continues to slow down.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The last 3 months in China were the worst for the country's economic growth since early 2009, 8.1% GDP compared with 8.9% last quarter. Now, if 8.1 sounds like a good number, it would be here in the U.S., where growth was just 3% at last check. But this is China we're talking about, a country with an economy that is still developing. The BBC's Juliana Liu is with us now from Hong Kong to go behind the numbers. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's being seen as the cause of this slowdown?
Well, exports out of China are slowing because demand in places like Europe and the US are weaker than it has been before. But really, what's driving the slowdown in China is the property market. In the last 10 years, property prices have gone up by more than tenfold. And you can imagine that makes a lot of people very angry because they're being priced out of the property market. So in response to that, the Chinese government has been trying to slow housing inflation. And that, in effect, is what's causing the slowdown in the overall economy that we're seeing now.
And I have to say, when I hear something like that over here in the United States, it sounds like you're experiencing something very similar to what we did right before our big financial crash with housing prices just going up, up, up.
Absolutely. That's certainly the big fear. And that property bubble bursting in the States has offered a lot of lessons to policymakers in China. So they're absolutely trying to avoid something like that, which is why this slowdown is very much a government-guided effort. But the real worry is that in some areas, perhaps this effort has already gone too far. We heard this week that a property developer has declared bankruptcy for the first time because of a lack of access to credit. So the worry is if a lot of property developers go bankrupt, would that have the same effect as a hard landing?
The BBC's Juliana Liu in Hong Kong, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, here in this country, we've all heard a lot about the Trayvon Martin shooting in Florida and that state's Stand Your Ground law that allows people to use force if they feel threatened. Well, today in St. Louis, that law will come under the spotlight as the National Rifle Association holds its annual convention. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The NRA has pushed Stand Your Ground laws in more than 30 states. Wisconsin recently expanded self-defense to include a vehicle, swimming pool, or business. The NRA spent about $100,000 lobbying there. Lisa Graves of the Center for Media and Democracy says the NRA has an impressive war chest.
But I think the NRA's potency is really more the potential for it to run ads against candidates who don't go along with the gun agenda.
The NRA may face a battle to defend Stand Your Ground laws. The Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence told me their public support is up. Gun owners are buying more guns. Industry analyst Jim Barrett says they're afraid President Obama will roll back gun rights in a second term.
It is an absolutely fabulous market. Take Sturm Ruger.
They make the Black Hawk revolver.
Their unit sales were up 52%. Smith & Wesson sales were up 24%.
Barrett says sales are booming in states where the NRA has pushed concealed carry laws. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up across Asia, but down right now in London, about 0.5% lower, and Frankfurt, about 1% lower. Google says it made a profit of almost $3 billion last quarter, and now the company is doing a 2-for-1 stock split, though the new shares will not include voting power. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 181 points to close at 12,986.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
Well, it's been a big week for earthquakes around the world. Thankfully, not a lot of damage is being reported after those quakes off the coast of Indonesia, Mexico, and Oregon, all on Wednesday, by the way. Now, even if you're prepared for a disaster like an earthquake at home, what would you do if it happens while you're at work? For more on that, let's bring in David Lazarus, consumer columnist for the LA Times. Hi, David.
Hi, Jeremy.
So how prepared are we for disasters like tornadoes or earthquakes or whatever?
Not so much, it looks like. According to a survey that was done last year by Wells Fargo and Gallup, turns out that more than half of all the businesses that were surveyed said they weren't that concerned about a disaster affecting them. And then of those that were taking it at least seriously, roughly half there as well said they were only somewhat prepared. So basically, if disaster strikes, your company might not necessarily have it all together.
Well, what should companies be doing to be more prepared for things like that?
Well, it turns out that there is a lot of good information out there, and some of the best comes from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. They've got a very voluminous manual on this, and among the highlights there are determining your worst-case scenario. For example, if you work in a nuclear power plant, your concerns are going to be different than if you worked in, say, a hydroelectric plant. Obviously, yep. You want to work out what the situation is going to be. Most importantly, develop an emergency action plan so people aren't just running around going, oh my goodness, they know what they're supposed to be doing. Then make sure that the employees know what the plan is. That's very important, making sure that everyone is looped in. And then, not least of which, make sure you've got enough equipment on hand to deal with whatever might happen.
And, David, I mean, I have to say, I don't know exactly what the plan is here at Marketplace. Do you know what your plan is? How prepared is the LA Times for something like that?
I'd like to think we're very prepared. We're an earthquake country, and yet when I went rooting around in the newsroom for our gear, it took some doing. I finally found some cabinets that had medical equipment and flashlights and a whole bunch of red hard hats. So either we're really prepared or we're all set for a Village People reunion tour.
LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And finally to Scotland, where there's been a natural gas leak going on in the North Sea for weeks, and there are concerns about the effect that's having on fish. So the government brought in taste testers. These seafood specialists take an initial deep inhalation of the fish, followed by one or two shallower sniffs. Then they taste the fish and spit it into a cup, then have some water and maybe a biscuit. The verdict so far? The fish are fine. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.